upholding scientific research and discovery in respect, as we should, we must also be alert to the equal and opposite danger that public policy could itself become the captive of a scientific, technological elite.
We've signed a climate convention on the importance of economic instruments and free markets. We're included in this mammoth Agenda 21 document and the Rio Declaration. Now, let me be clear on one fundamental point. The United States fully intends to be the world's preeminent leader in protecting the global environment.
Coming up, Technocracy News. Patrick Wood here for Technocracy News and Trends. Today is August 22nd, 2019. And I want to start out by asking you a question again. Have you ever received a ticket in the mail because you ran a red light and a little box up on the light pole took your picture and took a picture of your license plate and a picture of you driving the car, and they simply mailed you the ticket and you ground your teeth, perhaps? How did that feel? Have you ever talked to anybody that likes red light cameras that says, oh, that's a great idea, I don't mind getting those tickets at all. It saves me the time that the policeman has to pull me over and bust me on the spot. I don't know. I don't think anybody has taken a liking to the so-called red light photo enforced cameras that are basically all over America. The first article is headlined, How Red Light Cameras Undermine the Rule of Law. And it starts out, speed and red light cameras are the bane of many motorists. A modern idea made possible by technology, they have been installed in at least 24 states. Although these cameras are a revenue boon for governments across the nation, their intrusion into daily life is disturbing, and their constitutionality is dubious. Specifically, use of these cameras could violate the Sixth Amendment. The Confrontation Clause grants criminal defendants the right to be confronted with the witnesses against them. Since it is a camera and not a person that witnessed the offense, such violations generally cannot be considered a criminal offense. The ticket is issued to the owner of the vehicle, not to the person driving it, leaving a lack of certainty as to the identity of the offender. Therefore, the ticket in most places is nothing more than a civil fine, making enforcement and collection difficult. To date, governments have avoided this problem by requiring payment of the fine before motorists can renew their driver's license or auto registration. Although there generally are appeal procedures, they typically do not give drivers a day in court. In other words, what happened to being innocent until proven guilty? There are several for-profit companies that install and operate the cameras. Some of them are foreign-owned. In a typical arrangement, a camera company will contract with a local government to pay the capital cost of installing cameras in exchange for a share of the revenue generated via fines. In short, governments get a new revenue stream without any operating costs, and the camera companies make a tidy profit. The companies and government officials argue that greater safety will result from fewer accidents and that the increased government revenue will benefit the local communities. Studies to confirm those claims have yielded mixed results. Studies paid for by camera companies or governments usually show fewer accidents. Independent studies and those financed by opponents usually show no gains and sometimes worse results. There is more evidence that greater public safety actually depends on the timing of yellow and red lights. Longer yellow and all-way red times have been shown to significantly reduce accidents. Sometimes local governments actually decrease yellow light timing to catch more red light runners, a result of the perverse financial incentives that tempt government officials and camera companies. Studies also show motorists are more likely to hit the brakes hard at camera-enforced intersections, increasing rear-end collisions. Unsurprisingly, these cameras are deeply unpopular. Since 1991, there have been 42 elections on adopting or prohibiting either speed or red light cameras or both. In all but two of these, voters have opposed the cameras by an average margin of 63%. Well, we don't need to say any more about red light cameras. They're an absolute travesty of justice. They're unconstitutional, and they don't have any place in American society. And the reason at this point it appears that they continue to persist, actually they're forced upon us by city officials, is that there is a revenue stream attached to it. And the cities are willing to sell its citizens down the river for the sake of the revenue stream. Well, this shows you who's in charge here. It's not the citizens. It's the city government, who apparently feels that their survival and their cushy income streams are more important than the constitutionality of the people who live in their cities. This is just simply wrong. This is another issue that could be tackled on local basis all over the country to get rid of these things. If your city has them installed and your city is making money off these, you have an opportunity to have your voice heard and to get in there and mix it up with them and say, this needs to stop. It's violating your constitutional rights. The next story is just about as aggravating as a red light camera, and that has to do with homelessness. Well, homelessness is a problem, as you know, especially in the West, especially in cities like Los Angeles, San Francisco, Seattle, many other cities up and down the West Coast. It's a problem in other areas of the country as well, growing like crazy right now. So how do you solve the problem of homelessness? Where did these people come from? We have discussed this in the pages of Technocracy News and Trends before, that the policies of Agenda 21, when applied in major cities, results in the dislocation of citizens within those cities. This is very clearly demonstrated, very easily, but it hasn't yet occurred to city leaders that they are the reason that there's a homeless problem in their cities. And if they don't realize it that way, of course, they have no incentive to fix it. They could just stop what they're doing, of course, take those policies out, remove them, scrub them, get rid of them, but they won't do that. They say, no, the answer is to pour on more of it. So in the case of Los Angeles and Seattle in particular, in Los Angeles County, they've just adopted their own version of the Green New Deal. They say, what we need is more green economy. We need more green jobs. That'll fix our problem. Well, I got news for them. That's not going to not only fix their problem, it's going to cause homelessness to skyrocket in those cities, just like it is right now. And so I wrote, smart city technocrats don't have problems that can't be fixed by throwing more technology fixes at them. In this particular ludicrous extreme that seeks to fix broken lives, critics can only respond, people are not potholes. Some wise tech guy decided the way to solve the homeless problem was to make an app for it. Create an app. You know what an app is. That's the kind of program that you run on your smartphone or your tablet, an app. This article states, San Francisco and Seattle residents are becoming increasingly familiar with an easy-to-remember phone number, 311. As income inequality widens and tech companies continue to stake their claim in West Coast cities, a growing number of people are left without affordable housing. As a result, there's been a surge in homeless encampments, or tent cities as they're called, that are often reported by local residents via 311. So 311 is kind of the emergency phone line to call to report a new encampment, a homeless encampment, or a tent city. Individuals without housing in San Francisco surged 17% from 2017 to 2019. The Seattle Times reports that King County, Washington, home of Seattle, saw an 8% decrease in the county's homelessness in 2019, but that estimate is doubted by a city council member and service providers. And despite the reported decrease, there was a 309% uptick of people living in tents or unsanctioned encampments. The encampments have stirred back and forth debate among business owners, residents, and local politicians about how to deal with the homelessness problem. True to form, many cities have proposed tech-oriented solutions using apps to locate homeless people and get individuals off the street. But many questions remain about whether or not the apps are a smart solution to homelessness or simply a waste of government money. Apps allow community members to report encampments quickly and remotely, providing the ability to send a report directly to the corresponding city department. If someone experiencing homelessness is loitering at a local business, or if they appear to need medical attention, it all just takes a few clicks to make the city aware. San Francisco has touted their technology as a lifeline, a smart solution to the widespread problem, and a way to get help quickly for people living on the streets. Others have called it a snitch app. I would vote with the latter, by the way. It is a snitch app. And for all of the rat-infested problems that these homeless encampments have, all the rats don't live in the encampment. The article goes on, Seattle's Find It, Fix It app is a mobile version of the city's 311 number. Residents can alert the city to public problems with a message, including a location and description. Users submit issues by category, such as illegal dumping, potholes, dead animals, and other inquiries, allowing residents to report encampments, city spokeswoman Cindy Wilder told Smart Cities Dive in an email interview. With Find It, Fix It, reporting an issue is as easy as snapping a photo with your smartphone, according to the City of Seattle website. However, the app has faced particularly strong backlash. Homeless advocates and contracted street providers call Seattle's effort seriously disturbing and, at best, pointless. Smart policymakers and elected officials should know better than to use technology for what might offer the illusion of a quick fix, said Allison Isinger, executive director of the Seattle King County Coalition on Homelessness, in an email to Smart Cities Dive. The Find It, Fix It app has received similar public backlash, as well as hundreds of false reports, which took city employees a full day to manually sort. Smart policymakers and elected officials should know better than to use technology for what might offer the illusion of a quick fix. And that is really the main object of this story. People are not potholes waiting to be fixed. It's a typical technocrat solution to always suggest more technology as being the answer to whatever the problem is in life that you face. Make an app for it. Invent some new technology that will fix that problem. Well, we've already discovered, haven't we? The technology is not the fix to humanity's problems. It has never been in the past, and it will not be in the future. Indeed, people, and only people, are the resources that are able to help people that are homeless, and for that matter, in any other condition in life. It's about people. So in your city council or your county commissioners, bring Agenda 21 policies to your area. You need to get a seat at the table and tell them, we're not going to do that here. This is wrong. It's anti-American. It's anti-human in many cases. And it certainly is anti-civilization. And we do not want the fallout of homelessness in our city and our town, like Los Angeles, San Francisco, Seattle, and other irresponsible cities have done. We simply are not going to go down that road. And Mr. Councilman or Mrs. Councilwoman or Madam Mayor or whatever the case is, you must not do this. It simply is not what we want in our community. And people are not potholes just waiting to be fixed. The last story, and certainly the most important story of today, is titled Poverty, the Compassion Cartel, and Environmental Racism. It was written by my friend and contributor Tom DeWeese, president and founder of American Policy Center. He wrote an extensive article defending property rights. And you might immediately ask, what does this have to do with technocracy or Agenda 21 or anything else? Well, the fact is, the entire attack on property rights since 1992 has come from the bowels of the United Nations. They are the ones that have put forth sustainable development as the only possible economic system of the future. That's the Green New Deal, by the way. And secondly, that the elimination of property rights is absolutely essential to solve poverty in the world. And of course, the United Nations has its 17 sustainable development goals now, the very first one of which says that they want to eliminate poverty in all of its forms around the world. Well, taking away property rights does just the opposite. It pushes people into poverty. It does not bring them out. So Tom has written a complete expose, a very extensive expose of this whole concept. And he starts out, he says, in 2006, I was surprised to find myself sitting at a formal dinner in the middle of a 200-year-old debating society at Cambridge University in England. In a matter of minutes, I and five others were about to engage in a debate over the usefulness of the United Nations. But here, for a few minutes longer, at the dinner table, with the crisp white tablecloth, I was sitting next to one of my fellow debaters, Salese Shetty, the head of the UN's Millennium Project. I had ignored him through most of the dinner, but with just a few minutes left before the debate, I finally turned to him and said, "You realize you don't have a prayer, don't you?" He looked at me and asked, "About what?" I replied, "Ending poverty by 2015 through the use of redistribution of wealth." That was one of the eight listed goals of the UN's Millennium Project, accepted by world leaders in 2000, by the way. He said, "Yes, I know." I began to talk with him about the need to help the poor escape from poverty on their own rather than being condemned to lifelong breadlines. I talked about the need to establish private property rights as a means to build wealth. I mentioned that there was estimated to be almost $10 trillion in dead capital, that is, property in the world that no one is allowed to own or invest in. That's enough capital to help a lot of poor people break out of their dire situation. Mr. Shetty looked at me as I made these observations and said, "Hernando de Soto." Yes, that's exactly whom I was quoting. De Soto is an economist from Peru who has made it his life's work to help end poverty in the world by promoting private property ownership. To my amazement, Mr. Shetty looked at me and said, quote, "I have associates who are looking into this," De Soto's ideas, that is, "favorably." Just as he said those words, the call came for us to head up to the debating hall for our event. Of course, we were on opposite sides. As soon as the debate was over, I was outnumbered 5-1, as usual. I made a beeline to Mr. Shetty and said, "You and I started a conversation, and I want to finish it." A few weeks later, I traveled to New York City to meet with him in his UN office. During that meeting, he told me that, in a city in India, the local government was beginning to go over property records and officially register ownership, something that had never been done before. The result was that the economy of the community was starting to improve. That is exactly the point that Hernando de Soto is making as he travels the world meeting with national leaders. The core reason for poverty is bad government. In most of the world, people may own their homes, perhaps via an underground economy, but they have no official records through the government to prove it. Without the official proof as registration, they have no means to use the property for equity loans and investment, so it is essentially dead capital, as De Soto has labeled it. In his book, The Mystery of Capital, Why Capitalism Triumphs in the West and Fails Everywhere Else, De Soto explains the major differences between the American system and most other nations of the world. Here, in every single piece of privately held property, homes, even large equipment, is registered. In fact, the county registrar's office is one of the most important tools of freedom because it's where every American can prove ownership of their property. Because of that system, average Americans can use their property as a tool to obtain loans. At least 60% of American companies have been started through equity loans on private property. And those privately held companies went on to employ about 60% of the American workforce. That is how private property ownership made the United States the richest nation in the world almost overnight. Lack of such a system is the reason much of the rest of the world fell into extreme poverty. In those cases, the people have no way out of poverty, and they're forced to rely on government handouts. De Soto's book was called the, quote, "Blueprint for a New Industrial Revolution" by the Times of London. Today, De Soto travels the world, meeting with world leaders who seek his guidance on how they can end poverty in their nations. Yet, when he tells them the secret is private ownership of property, many balk, telling him with a troubled smile that the people in their nations just aren't ready for such a policy. They don't understand the concept of private property ownership. So the promise of a great new financial revolution that could spread wealth and freedom to every corner of the world never gets off the ground. And the story goes on. It's quite long. I highly recommend that you read the entire article because it is pivotal in the understanding of what sustainable development is trying to do to our nation and the world for that matter. The core fallacy in sustainable development, and there are many, by the way, but the core fallacy is the removal of private property rights in the economic system that they do call sustainable development. They view property rights as selfish, self-centered, tied to capitalism, unnecessary, and backwards, believing that all the resources of the world need to be managed by them, not by you, for the common good. And the outcome of this is going to be exactly opposite to what the number one sustainable development goal says, end poverty everywhere. If sustainable development is successful in displacing capitalism and free enterprise, it won't lift people out of poverty. It'll put everyone into poverty. Think about that for a bit. Is this the actual stated goal of anybody anywhere? Well, not the United Nations, certainly, but there are others who have suggested that is exactly the plan, is to remove the resources of the world from the benefit of the people of the world, so that those resources can be conserved, even if it means people in the world are moved into poverty. We've discussed this many times before. Sustainable development and all of the programs coming out of the United Nations, that would be Agenda 21, 2030 Agenda, New Urban Agenda, and others, all of which wrapped up in a big ball is just nothing more than warmed over technocracy from the 1930s, by the way. All of these things have been perpetrated by the global elite from day one. And they're after the resources of the world. They want to control the resources, and they don't want you to control anything. I'm Patrick Wood for Technocracy News and Trends. We'll see you next time.